I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. I got sober here at Howe Place, and it's a few years ago I moved down to Atlanta. It's just a little too far. I don't ever make it back up here that much anymore, and it's just great to be home. Thanks, Bill, for inviting me to do this. It's really an honor to be here. And also, I don't know if it was 2 years when this happened, but Howe Place done got nice. There's paint on the walls. The ceiling's not falling down.
You left.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I left. So I want to give two quick disclaimers to anyone who might be new to AA and doesn't know how things work around here. First, anything I share tonight, it's really just my opinion, not necessarily that of AA. Unless I'm reading directly from this book here, I'm just a guy that's worked the steps and could be wrong about things. I don't speak for AA. And then the second thing is we have a spiritual program, so naturally I'm going to talk about my spiritual journey, and I'm going to talk about God. If you're one of those people that gets queasy at the G word, I want you to know here at AA we kind of have a thing where whenever I say God, it just means the God of my understanding. And other people have the higher power, the God of their understanding, and there is no friction among us on these matters here at AA. So just want to let you know, I'm going to talk about that a lot, but I will not proselytize to you or anything. The only ulterior motive I do have is I think I want to tell my story in such a way that if you're trapped in alcoholic hell and you're wondering if this actually does work, I hope I tell my story in such a way that you realize the answer is a resounding yes. Other than that, I don't have any other ulterior motive. In thinking about how to do a speaker meeting, I was taught, and I still believe, that the best way is just kind of comes from our book. Our book says, we come together and we share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. And it says we talk about what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. So that's kind of my model, at least my goal. I'm going to try to break it into those three things. And the other thing is, like, I had mommy issues in seventh grade, and you know, like I had cancer years ago, and all, but like I think talking about that stuff isn't really going to help anyone. So I'm going to talk about what I used to be like as it relates to alcoholism, what happened as it relates to alcoholism and recovery, and what I'm like now as it relates to alcoholism and sobriety. So hopefully this will be the shortest section. I want to talk about what I was like. And basically, I kind of have the same drunkalog stories as a lot of people, but I think what matters is I started drinking alcoholically actually in my late 20s, and I know some people start that way from the very first drink. I think I drank semi-normally, but it just sort of showed up later. But at some point in my probably early 30s, I crossed that line where when I wanted to quit, I could not. Probably over a 10, I don't know, however many years it was, little by little it just got worse and worse. And it kind of then started looking like me. You know, at first I was just getting buzzed every night, then I was getting drunk every night. Fast forward a year, I was getting drunk on Saturday and Sunday morning. Fast forward a year, I was drinking liquor on my lunch break at work. And I tried to quit many times. Like, I actually went to some pretty extremes. I went to outpatient rehab once. I know I wanted to quit. I actually moved in with a friend of mine for 2 weeks because I was telling him if I'm by myself, I just know I can't quit. I've tried 1,000 times and I never can stay quit. So he made an agreement that I should. I was going to go stay with him. It was like homemade rehab, I guess. But part of the agreement was because. But interestingly, it never occurred to me to come to AA. Like seriously, part of the agreement was I had to promise to go to an AA meeting, and I didn't want to go, but I did. And I remember my very first meeting. I heard people talking about their stories, and it blew me away. I thought I was such a complicated, unique individual, and people were talking about me in their stories. And that's when I had a sneaking suspicion I was an alcoholic. Anyway, I started coming to Howe Place. And because basically I was having problems and I was isolating a good bit. And I was kind of getting the shakes and I really wanted to quit. And basically the way that looked is I think I came in here, I got a sponsor. I think we may have worked a step or two. I think I made it about 30 days, but I got really depressed. That's why I started drinking in the first place, is alcohol made me feel better when I was depressed. And I just sort of noticed my cycle over and over is remove the alcohol, get really miserable and depressed, realize I don't want to live like that, and then drink. And then each time the consequences are worse, and then just like rinse and repeat for years and years and years. So that was my first experience in AA. I think I made it 30 days or so, and I got really depressed, and I was like, screw this, and I got drunk, so I just wasn't ready. And then I came in and I came in and out of How Place, I think for a few years. And one of the times, basically my consequences got worse. They just looked like I had what I now know is the obsession of the mind. I was always thinking about drinking or thinking about not drinking. You know, it's like every day, like I would pour the liquor out in the morning, and I would say, like, pray to God, like, I'm done. It's over. I'm not drinking again. And I meant it. Like, I'd pass a lie detector test. And somehow by the end of the workday, I just had all this anxiety, and my nervous system was tense, and I just had to have a drink, and I would change my mind and decide to quit tomorrow. And I quit tomorrow for years. Eventually, I think I hit what I thought was a bottom, and I decided that actually that I really wanted what y'all had, and I was going to work the steps, and I came back, and I got a sponsor, and this guy was pretty hardcore, and I worked all 12 steps, and like a miracle happened along the way, and it was good. And I'm going to, about this time, I heard a story about this lady, Miss Mary. She had the best chocolate chip cookies, right? Like everybody who has her eats her cookies says they're the very best. They ask for her recipe, but her friend kept trying to make them, and they never turned out right. And so Miss Mary went to go help her make them one time and observed like how she was doing it. She had all the ingredients. She followed the recipe, like line by line. And when it came to, you know, she put in the flour, put in the eggs, it called for 1 cup of butter. She got out her margarine, put in a cup of margarine. And Miss Mary said, well, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, well, it calls for butter. So I'm putting in my butter. Well, I use margarine. It's healthier. And Mary thought, okay. She finished the cookies, made them, and she said, see what happens? See what I mean? They're good, but they don't taste like your cookies. Like, these are Miss Mary's cookies. And she said, oh, well, you made cookies. You didn't make my cookies. Miss Mary's cookies call for butter. You use margarine. So, and I actually, that is a story I heard, and I laughed at it and how silly that woman is. But I tell it because the way I came and I worked my 12 steps, I worked them like fearlessly and thoroughly and honestly, except for one thing on the fifth step. I sort of fudged it a little bit. I've become friends with my sponsor, and I kind of had a group of guy friends, and there's some things I was just so ashamed of, I just wasn't going to tell them. Like, so I was thorough and honest about everyone, all my resentments and fears and people I've harmed and people I've used, but basically it was like in my drinking, I kind of considered myself a straight heterosexual man who had like messed around sexually with some dudes, and I definitely was not going to share that with him because I thought, well, he'll judge me and be mean to me and reject me. That's like the secret I'm carrying to my grave. And don't mishear me. I'm not making any commentary on gay people or anything. Just at that point in my life, that was like it was a piece of shame I was carrying, and I was afraid of, I was just not going to share that. So I shared everything else except that. And then I continued to work the rest of the steps. And the obsession was removed from me. Like, it worked. Towards the end of my drinking, I could not stay sober for more than a day. Like, literally one day. And suddenly I was sober I made it to about 100 days. And what happened was whatever the magic was that happened, it sort of stopped working. I got really depressed, and people would be like, are you going to meetings? I'm like, yes. And are you calling your sponsor? Yes. And are you doing your 10th and 11th step? Yes. But I just was miserable. And then a week or two of that went by, and I think on the third week I just realized, like, you know, I did these steps perfectly, and God has turned his back on me and abandoned me. And I had what I thought was logical thinking, like, oh, I see how it is now. Like, I believe that God's real, but he's totally abandoned me, and like it's not working anymore. And I came up with all kinds of conclusions, like, you people are all wrong, and God is going to abandon you too. And if you think God actually cares, you're wrong. He's more like a dad that says he cares, but then he leaves and you never hear from him again, so it might as well not be there. That's what I concluded. And I remember I told my buddy Nick, I was like, my logic is flawless. And and he remembered him telling me, like, dude, I think you're crazy. But that's really where I got to, and I share that story because I realized AA didn't work for me, and the God that had helped me stopped helping me. But what I really realized is I kind of made Miss Mary's cookies with margarine, not with butter. And I realized this way after, whenever I came back. The book talks about this exactly, and I want to read it since I'm talking about when AA did not work for me. So in the fifth step part where it talks about why we should do this and be thorough and honest, it says, the best reason first. This is page 72. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but they hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So, like, I think I just share that because, well, one, that's just my experience. I came in, I worked the steps, and they didn't work. And it cost me another 3 years of hell and drinking and misery and panic attacks and everything that goes with it because I didn't follow the rest. I worked a fifth step. I didn't work the AA fifth step. And I got drunk later. So the only thing that happened after that, I just mentioned it. I think it took me 2 or 3 years to come back in here. And basically I got beat up by alcohol enough, finally, to have some humility. And I think my most rock bottom moment was there was a night I had alcohol withdrawal all the time. And if you've had anxiety attacks and panic attacks from or alcohol withdrawal or anything else, it's a terrible way to live. And that happened to me one night, and I remember drinking liquor, and it in my mind it didn't help, it made it worse, and my heart was like, it was like really doing that, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack and die. And I realized, until then I was like shaking my fist at God, that SOB, and who cares if I die, I don't care. But when I really thought I was about to die, I was terrified. I was. And I don't remember if on the kitchen floor that night I said help me to God, but I kind of gave me the humility to where if he's the help, then so be it. I just realized I didn't want to go out like that. Long story short, I called someone to take me to the hospital, and I detoxed, and eventually I came back here. And it's interesting. I still believed in a higher power. I just didn't like him. I didn't think he was good. And I wasn't sure if AA would work for me because I'd already tried it, and it didn't work for me. I think now my perspective is a little better, but it sure wasn't then. But I had nowhere else to go. Like, the alcohol had quit working for me, meaning I had to keep drinking it, but it never made me feel good anymore. That whole, we talk about it, I couldn't keep drinking and I couldn't quit drinking. I had nothing to do, so I sort of had this image of, like, if you're drowning and you're in that point where you really want some air and a stick appears for you to grab onto, you don't really question the color of the stick or who's holding it. You just grab it. And like, if this God I didn't like, and if AA and the spiritual program was the solution, let me grab it and see what happens. And in my note, I made notes so I don't ramble and get off track. This is where I have a smooth segue. I for the first time in my whole life, I wanted what you guys had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. I was terrified to die. And I realize now that before Sonny read it, we read it before every meeting. It's an if-then statement. For years I heard it, and I didn't hear the if-then statement. If you have decided you want what we have and you are willing to go to any length, then you are ready to take certain steps. I finally 100% met those two conditions when I came back here. And all I know is the first night, somehow, I mean, I'm not exaggerating, I didn't have a sober 24 hours for at least a year, but somehow the first night after I came to a meeting, I didn't drink, which in itself is a miracle. Like, I remember people would get a 30-day chip, and I was like, that sounds like a miracle. And somehow the second night and third night, I don't know, I was just coming to meetings, I shared, I got a sponsor, and somehow I wasn't drinking. I just think the only explanation now is that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I tried to do that for myself for 10 years and I never could. So I guess that's what happens when you meet those two conditions. What happened to me, I'm just going to kind of go through the steps, hopefully fairly briefly. Step one says, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. I think I shared enough of my drunk stories. Like, I had the obsession real bad. I tried to quit for years and years. And anyway, I had no fight in me against this step. So I think I finally did it perfectly. Like, there was just no hesitation about that being true for me. Step two said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. For me personally, I am so grateful for the word could. Because to be honest, I did not believe that God would restore me to sanity. I didn't. But could? I mean, it's the past tense of can, like is to be able to. Do I believe God is able to? Yes, I did. I was able to make my start there with step two. And which brought me to step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So, I think I already talked about my higher power concept. I believed in the God, and I didn't think he was good or would help me. But kind of, I talked about it a lot with my sponsor, and what I came to is the third step was kind of like jumping off a cliff, because the cliff jump was, I decided to believe that this book and the you people who are sober and ultimately God knew what's best for me better than I knew for myself. So I committed to work all 12 steps, exactly how they're written, with no margarine, and see what happened. And that does feel like jumping off a cliff. I'm placing my life in the hands of these other things when I've always run it my whole life. And that's how I did step three. I decided to do the rest of the steps. And at that time, some things that helped me, because my cycle did start. I removed the alcohol and I got really depressed. And the first week, I was miserable. Second week, I was miserable. Every day I wanted to drink. Like somehow I didn't, which is a miracle, but every day I wanted to. But it started off with guys giving me advice and telling me what to do. And I thought it was stupid. I didn't feel like doing it, but I would do it anyway. I really think the reason I am sober and the program worked for me is because when I thought I was going to die on my kitchen floor from alcoholism, it gave me enough humility to when one of you guys would give me advice and I didn't feel like doing it, I would just do it anyway. So I had this sort of a mantra. I heard somebody in a meeting say this idea. I heard somebody on a talk show on the radio say this idea, and I was listening to some Christian sermon who said the same idea, all in the same weekend. And I thought, okay, maybe somebody's telling me something. And the idea was, don't worry about how you feel. It doesn't matter how you feel, worry about what you do, because your feelings will catch up with your actions. And that kind of became my mantra. I'd be leaving work, and what I wanted to do was like zone out and listen to music and smoke a cigarette. But I was supposed to, like, call my sponsor. So if I hadn't right away, they would call me. And I'd be like, that's the last thing I feel like doing. And I would say out loud like a crazy person, it doesn't matter how I feel, it matters what I do. And, you know, hit the green button. And that I did that with everything, especially, like, the first 3 weeks. Everything I had to do was the opposite of what I felt like doing. And I don't know about you alcoholics, but my whole life, the thing that determined what I was going to do was whatever I felt like doing. But I wanted to emphasize that. I think that really did help me, the fact that I finally just took advice. My sponsor, he made a lot of time for me. I was up here every day, and we went through the steps. We didn't, like, rush through them, but we did not waste time. All right, move on. The book tells me to get help with doctors. So I did get help with my depression. And I went to a doctor and I went to a psychiatrist. And I had a friend who had been hospitalized for depression and anxiety, and then I saw her a year later and she wasn't crazy anymore. So I called her and asked her for help. I'm like, I need you to teach me whatever they taught you in there, because it clearly worked. And so I did that. I went to her house once a week, and we kind of went through this depression stuff. And all that to say, AA is what enabled me to get the alcohol out and get help with that. But they're not, you know, like, mutually exclusive. AA tells me, get if I need help, medical help or whatever, get it. And I did. I also love, too, that my sponsor never tried to take away my God concept, even though it was pretty twisted. He was like, just, when I was doing the third step, he was like, just set it aside and let's just do the steps. I think that was very helpful to me, too, because if he would have tried to impose his God concept on me, or it just wouldn't have worked. So the other thing that really helped me is I had guys talking to me about, we have a spiritual program and it's an altruistic program. Altruism meaning we do things for the benefit of someone else, not ourselves. And they were saying, like, even though you're on step whatever, two or three, like, hey, you should try this. When you feel like crap, do something for someone else. It'll usually make you feel better. Man, that also saved my life, too. There was a couple times I really, really wanted to drink, and I started for the first time in my life. Who is trying to help someone else? And the side effect of that usually made me feel better. That's still some of my best depression medicine. Anyway, step four says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. This is where you write out, you know, I wrote out all my resentments, my fears, people I've harmed, including people I've used for sex and romantic interests. And like I said, this time I did it the right way and I didn't hold anything back. And my sponsor's response when I told him this thing I was so ashamed of course, was like, all right, well, what are the defects? Okay, listen. And I wanted to be like, didn't you hear me? He was so underwhelmed. And I've since learned this, like, nobody cares. Like, so many of us walk around with shame about things, or like we're ashamed of sexual stuff, or our eating disorder, or a marriage we've ruined, or like whatever the stuff is. I bet there's like 40 people who could raise their hand in here and confirm that, like, when they finally tell the thing, the sponsor doesn't care. Like, nobody cares. And half the time they're like, oh yeah, dude, me too. Like, I've listened to a lot of fifth steps. I don't even remember what those guys told me 2 years ago, because the whole point is to let them get free and identify character defects and ask God to remove them. Like, not, anyway, that was like a big revelation to me. This thing I was so ashamed to tell someone that I was willing to die over it, that's crazy. But I think it's fairly common. Anyway, I did step five the right way this time. I followed AA's recipe down to the T. And I got no rejection. And man, it feels good to have at least one human being and God of your understanding with whom you have no secrets. It's a fantastic feeling. And I think that's part of why we do it, too, to clean out all that garbage. Anyway, step six says we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. The way I did step six, I did it straight out of the Big Book, which basically says that night, you know, we take an hour, and it just tells me exactly what to do. Consider stuff, read some stuff, are you really willing? And I did it. In step seven, there's a prayer. Step seven reads, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And I did step six and seven that night, at just, you know, exactly the way the book says. I have a friend that I hear him say sometimes, like, he's like, well, the way I look at it, you can do step six and seven in an hour, or you can do them in a lifetime. Kind of like an either or, and then he always kind of argues like it's the lifetime. And to me, this is a both and, not an either or. I find the more I go on in sobriety, step six and seven have become much deeper. I keep having character defects exposed, and I have to be willing to have God remove them. And sometimes I don't want to. So that's how I did them then. But these days in my sobriety, I still am dealing with having God remove character defects and trying to not hang on to them. Anyway, step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made my step eight list when we did the fifth step. And I really like the way we did it. I think I had a urgent, like, do make these amends now list. And then we had a, like, maybe, or it's difficult, maybe someone who lives out of town or in another state. And then we had, like, a never, we'll figure it out later list, which helped me get started. But by the end, by the time I got to the maybe, never list, I basically had to do all of them. But somehow it helped me breaking it up like that. I don't think he tricked me on purpose, but all I can say is with the amends, step 9 reads, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And with step 9, I just want to say I was very thorough, and I didn't take shortcuts. I unfortunately see people take shortcuts sometimes, or I've heard of. I tried this bullshit too, and sorry, I have to use that word because that's what it is. Like, well, I'm not going to really make the amends. I'm just going to do a living amends. You know, and I understand the concept of a living amends, and I agree with it, where you change your behavior. And maybe, in some cases, maybe that makes sense. But when you can make, when I can make an amends, but I don't do it, and my cop out is, which I think I tried, like, well, I'm just going to be nice. I don't want to bring that stuff up. This is where it's important to have a sponsor to look you in the eyes and tell you, like, you're full of crap. You have to do it. And I did. And I was really afraid. And step 9, one thing is that they all went pretty well. Like, I was really terrified to make these amends to people. I had really pushed everyone out of my life. I didn't really realize it, but I had some friends that kind of needed me, and I just pushed them all away because I became an isolating drinker the past few years. I would just sit in my room and drink, and I had a roommate, and I made amends to her first, and it was great. She was gracious and understanding. I know they don't always go well, but in my case, they did go well, and my sponsor didn't let me get away with anything. We made a plan. All right, like this week, you're making amends to this person, and next week. So it was really good. I had to just focus on my actions, and if I didn't feel like doing it, doesn't matter how I feel, it matters what I do. I mean, I would reword that these days and just say I shouldn't focus on how I feel. I should focus on what I do because my feelings catch up with my actions, and they did. I remember halfway through the 9th step, that's where we read those promises, the 9 step promises. I do remember for the first time in years, it was in the morning before work, I looked in the mirror, and I just kept looking at myself, and I didn't turn away because I didn't hate the guy I was looking at. Like, for the first time in a long time, I think I just, my self-esteem started getting better. Or all I can say is I didn't hate myself. And that was a really big deal. And then the other thing was some of these amends required courage. And when I just did them, I started to feel courageous. And I think these are blessings that we don't talk about, but they kind of happen through the steps. When you just work the program, there's all these blessings and things. And I guess if you have really low self-esteem like me, it just changes in the process. You just have to follow the exact recipe as it's written. Step 10, I have a clock here. Okay, good, I have some time. This is really my favorite step. And anyway, it reads, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And on page 84 of the book, it says, step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So the way we did it is, as I was still cleaning up the past, I started doing the 10th step, which to me is what it says. And kind of the magic of the 10th step for me is there's that part where it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, here's what you do. And clearly, I think you guys know by now, I went very literal and did my steps out of the book, but it tells me to do 4 things. Like, when these things crop up, ask God at once to remove them, discuss them with someone immediately, make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, and resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And I started actually doing those. I was doing it like my life depended on it, and I started discovering all kinds of crazy things. Like, the story that really sticks out to me around this time was there's this guy that used to always piss me off at work because I had a task job. I had 100 things I had to do every day, and I would just go and try to get it all done. And this was one of those, like, slow talkers, you know, and he'd come up every day and be like, well, hey, did you have a good weekend? You know, and like, and he would just talk, and like, instead of a mature adult who would just say, yes, thank you, all right, I've got to get back to work. I was this weird sicko people pleaser. Like, I wouldn't tell him that. I would just sit there and get pissed off. Because he's like ruining my productivity and whatever. And like, it's so dumb, but that's where I was. Like, for a year, I struggled. I was pissed off at this guy, and I'd be mad the rest of the day, and sometimes I would snap. So I remember my sponsor drilling this into my head. I remember, and like, I was having, by this time, the obsession had been removed. I'm going to come back and talk about that shortly. And like, I started having peace and serenity, and I would see this person walk up and be like, oh God, here it comes. And be like, oh wait, what are those things I'm supposed to do? And like, okay, I got it. And, you know, well, one, change my behavior. And like, when he starts talking to me and I have to be productive, like, one, don't be a selfish asshole. Like, who do you think you are? Like, you can engage with someone for 30 seconds. Two, like, being a, you know, my sponsor taught me how to be a responsible adult, I think, and just tell him, like, yeah, and if he really needs to get something off his chest, tell him, I'd love to have lunch with you, but now I need to get back to work. But among that, when I start getting angry, I would ask God to remove it, but I would still kind of be, like, angry. I couldn't, it says discuss with someone immediately. I mean, I couldn't really do that because I was in the middle of work. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, and resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And that part at work I could always do. Like, even if there's an alcoholic around, I have a coworker who is lonely and having a bad day. I can say something nice. There's always somebody I can, like, put my thoughts on how I can help them. Or my boss is paying me money. Maybe I can, like, focus on doing a really, really good job. But I started discovering every day when this person would walk up that resentments don't have to infect me and ruin my whole day. Like, they would walk up, I discovered I can do these step 10 things, and it's like, what would normally happen is a resentment's like an arrow, and it goes in my heart, and it affects me, and then later down the day, I say something rude to somebody, and they get mad, and it just starts a chain reaction. And with step 10, I felt like, is there any nerds like me who remember The Matrix? Remember, I felt like Neo, when he realizes what's really going on, and they shoot the bullets at him, and he sticks his hand out, he's like, no. And the bullets fall down, you know, and he just, like, realizes this power he has. I remember sitting at my workplace, and these things that normally would ruin me and give me resentments, I could use these tools and just, no, stop it. And I didn't have to walk around pissed off all the time. I get a little emotional talking about it, because that's what keeps me with peace and serenity. Like, it's so important to me. And sometimes I get lazy and I stop doing that and I pay the consequences. All right, I got a few more minutes. I told Brian I would tell the story because I told him, I got a resentment at a... Gosh, some things never change. That was 5 years ago. By the way, I forgot to say that. I've been sober just over 5 years. It happened last week. There's this girl at work and she's like, doing things that I think are making my customers... She's not taking care of my customers. So I act like I'm noble, but it's probably really about me and my ego. But I get mad at her, and I keep emailing her, and like, will you please do this thing? She like, doesn't do it and drops the ball. And I told a friend about it, and I just built up a resentment, really. And then it turned to one day she sent me this email and copied my boss and was like, please don't copy me on emails, like, whatever. It doesn't really matter the details. So she said something, and I read it, and what I read was one thing, and, like, my blood pressure boiled. I was so mad. This is injustice. And I got so... And this just happened last week. But it's okay. Progress, not perfection. And so I sort of did these four things. I asked God to remove the resentment. But, y'all, it didn't work. On the second day, I finally told someone, and I told my buddy Brian, and we went through and I did an inventory, and I felt better that night, and I was like, okay, good, that's it. I told my inventory to someone, I'm good, but I didn't really do the other ones. And then I woke up, I think it was Wednesday morning, this was like day three, I was still in the bed, the alarm was going off, and my brain was going like, what am I going to say when I see her? I bet I'm going to type. And I'm planning out this sick, awful thing. So, but the point of the story is, so then I finally, I'm like, I don't call it divine inspiration or finally like learning the hard way over and over. I go to work and I walk into her office and I start by saying, "Hey, do you have a moment? I want to apologize." And that changed the air in the room. And she said, "No, I want to apologize." And what happened was we both apologized and we both understood the other one. And I realized she is a very good person and a really, really good worker. But there's a whole set of circumstances that I didn't know about. And now that I know about them, holy cow, I really respect her. And thank you. And she got tears in her eyes. And it was this whole God moment. And I walked back to my desk and this resentment that I've been trying to get rid of for 3 days was like gone. Like, I've been trying to get rid of it and I don't have the power to do that. But somehow when I use these tools and I actually did the thing, the actual make amends, and then I was trying to think of how to help her, so let me start with, then it worked. I tell those stories just to say the 10th step, of course, is very special to me. And without it, I know I would be angry all the time and fearful and drunk and dead. So, one more thing I want to talk about here at this part is the 10th step promises. This is when I changed and I knew that AA really works for good. At that time, I had to go to a work function. Our company was sold. I just had to be there. There was an open bar. Everyone was drinking. In fact, the owner was hammered. And I was around 6 months sober, I remember. And I discussed it. And the book tells us when we can go and can't be around alcohol and all the stuff. And I remember I had this one drink that was my favorite drink of choice. It was expensive, so I didn't drink it towards the end. But God's honest truth, the guy in front of me and the two guys here ordered that drink. And I was sitting there, and the waiter came down, and he put it right in front of me. And I could smell it. And I pushed it away, and I said, "I had the Coke." And then he gave me the Coke and walked away, and I was fine, and I didn't want to drink it. And that same night, later, people were standing. Somebody spilled some red wine on my shoulder, and I could also smell it. And I was fine. And I just realized there, like, I felt safe and protected. And then it was later that I want to read this 10th step promises. It says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition." That happened to me that night. It's 6 months sober. And then later when I remember reading those promises, that's so special to me because to me that's what it's all about. If AA was just about getting sober and staying miserable and fighting temptation all the time, count me out. I can't live miserably. But like, thank God AA is about becoming free and not fighting alcohol or anything or anyone. So that brings me to step 11, which reads, "Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out." Basically, the way I do this, page 86 just tells me exactly what to do. Again, I overthink things all the time. Thank God that I just do that, what it says in there. It says every night it gives me a little prayer and an inventory kind of to do. And every morning it tells me certain things to pray and ask God for, and I do it. And then there's other things. Like, it also says I'm a Christian. I read the Bible. I do that then too. And it tells me to. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying I love is that I just have to follow the freaking do what it says. Like, and it works. That's what I'm trying to say. I want to talk about somewhere, I don't even remember exactly the day, but somewhere between like step 4 and step 9, I had their obsession removed. And this to me is also kind of what AA is all about. I told you the first few weeks I was always miserable, but I kept coming and kept coming, and was working the steps, because for the past, I don't know, however many years, my mind was always thinking about drinking or not drinking, and once that thought gets in there, it ends the same way. But I remember I used to stay up here. There's a, what's it called, night owls? I would come to the 8 o'clock meeting, I would stay for the 10 o'clock meeting, and I wouldn't leave the front porch until like 11:45, because if I were driving home and the liquor stores were still open, I just didn't trust myself. Like, I just, there was no telling. And I remember one day, I was standing right by that box, by the coffee, and I went to walk out, and I looked up at the door, and it just hit me that I wasn't afraid. And I knew I wasn't going to drink that night. And I just stopped. And I realized what had happened. It was like hearing silence for the very first time. That whatever that thing is that always made me drink, it was gone. And I may have looked goofy. I wish there was someone who observed it. They could tell me. I stopped right there and I just looked up and I said, thank you to God. Because I knew he removed it. And I had a spiritual experience right there by the coffee cream. And I really did. I felt God's presence, like, on me and in me, and it was very good. And that obsession was removed. And I went home that night. I didn't stay for night owls. I went home that night, and I didn't drink, and I haven't had a drink since. I'm very grateful for that. I get emotional talking about it. And which brings me to the conclusion that I was wrong about God. Clearly I told the cookie story. Obviously, that's how I worked the steps when it didn't work, right? I didn't do the AA fifth step. I made my own substitute. So it's kind of like when somebody saves you and changes you and takes off your chains, you have a way of not hating them anymore. And that's what happened with me and my higher power. I realized that I was wrong about God, and I was wrong about all of you guys, and I was wrong in my narcissism in the court trial I had held for God in my mind and found him guilty of being an SOB. I was wrong. And the stuff that the book says and that AA teaches, that we have this simple plan, and when we follow it, we have a spiritual experience, and God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves, it's true. And I sense... I love God now, and I know that he is for us, and he rescued me. It started by the coffee pot. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm out of time. What I want to say about this is it's such a joy to be able to help someone, to look someone when you're sponsoring that, someone who thinks no one could ever understand them, and they look up and you can say, I understand. And like, yes, there is hope. It's awesome. As they say, it's an experience you cannot miss. It's the foundation stone of my recovery. I just want to end this story by saying what it's like now. It's very simple. When I work it, it works. When I consistently do 10, 11, and 12, and I'm consistently happy, and I'm not afraid of depression, and I'm not afraid of alcohol. I'm a free man. Sometimes I get lazy and I don't work it, and I start getting unhappy. So I think if I could just say what it's like now, it's very simple. It works when I work it, and it doesn't when I don't. That's the summary of how it works. Going back to my ulterior motive, that sort of question I posed, of if you're in alcoholic hell or you can't stop drinking, and if anyone who hears this is wondering, is this true? Does this work? Would it work for me? Is there hope? I'm going to close with reading on page 153. This is what the big book says. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come, for the age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. If you have heard anything, or if there's anything you're going to remember, I hope it's that I'm one man who's living proof, along with all kinds of other people who are living proof that the age of miracles is still with us, and the hopeless slavery of alcoholism has a solution, and we're walking proof of it. That's my story. Thank you.